a donut hole in a donut's hole. But we must look a little closer. And when we do, we see the donut hole has a hole in its center. It is not a donut hole, but a smaller donut with its own hole. And our donut is not a hole at all.
Look.
Hey guys, welcome to the Late Night Show with 2 hours per hour.
The podcast where we talk about 2 hours worth of movie in 1 hour's worth of podcast. My name is Eliza Chin.
And my name is Brian Liu. And you are listening to the Late Night Show of 2 hours per hour. And this is where I wish I have a mic so I can whisper into it.
Right,
make it all vibey.
Like this.
Yeah, like this. This is my best.
How have you been? Oh my gosh, Brian, happy new month. Today is the 1st of June.
Okay, happy new month, okay.
Happy new month, yeah, this is a thing my family does. I think it's really sweet and really funny. And whoever remembers first that it is the first day of the month gets nothing except the satisfaction of getting to say happy new month first. Okay, so this morning we all woke up, right? And it's the 1st of June. And then, like, you wake up, you make your way to the living room, you're very sleepy, or not, whatever. And then one person says, oh my gosh, happy new month! And then everyone else is like, dang it, happy new month! You know, because everyone else forgot.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
It's quite fun.
But I kind of can't imagine it.
Happy new month to our Patreon listeners. So if you are listening to this... Oh, how do I say this? If you're listening as a Patreon, then you're listening a week early.
Yep.
But if not, then you're just listening at the normal time, which is fine. You're not late or anything. You're just not early.
You're just not that special.
You are special. You know what? You are special. Everyone is special.
Oh, true. From last episode. That's...
Yeah, gosh, Brian.
Ah,
but you are not early. Not everyone is early. Do you know what I want to know? Do you know what? We'll talk more about Patreon later and, like, what you get if you decide to support us that way. But what I want to know, Brian, is what have you been watching this past week?
Yep. Okay, let me hop onto the letterbox real quick.
Let me pull up the letterbox. Let's go.
I watched The Interview, Sweeney Todd, Life is Beautiful, in English class, Brick, Knives Out again, and I watched Her and The Intern again.
Yep. That's cool. Which one was your favorite one from all of those?
It's a hard decision between Her, Brick, and Sweeney Todd. I like these three.
Do you want to tell us what those movies are about?
I'm gonna sum it up real quick. Her is basically about this guy that's dating Siri, like his Siri. Like the iPhone Siri.
That's so funny. Yeah. Alexa, this is so funny. Will you please play Despacito? No, that's not the meme. The meme is, Alexa, this is so sad once you play Despacito. In that case, I will say, Siri, this is so funny. Won't you play Savage by Megan Thee Stallion?
Hey, Google. Okay. I don't have an iPhone.
Oh, it's okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
Her is the Yanos Lanthimos movie, right? Same director as The Lobster. And The Favourite, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think that's right. I think so. He does, like, weird stuff, doesn't he?
No, it's... Wait a second.
Pretty sure
that's kind of
embarrassing.
It's by Spike Jonze.
I swear but, Her was Yanos Lanthimos.
It feels like it, eh? I can see why you would think that. But yeah, okay. Brick is about the same. Brick is from the same director as Knives Out, like his earlier films. It's like a mystery thing in
Rai Jojo.
What?
Rian Johnson.
Ah.
Who also directed my second favorite Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Because obviously A New Hope is just like, mwah! That's the best one. It's the first one. It's the best one. It's got heart. It's got everything. It's got adventure. It's got romance. It's got momentum. And I could rewatch A New Hope over and over again. But I also really like The Last Jedi.
True. I don't remember half the Star Wars movie, but we can move on from that part. But Brick is good. I liked it. I liked it a lot. And Sweeney Todd is about this like musical play about this barber that just goes around killing people because he's trying to find his daughter.
It's Tim Burton, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yes. I don't really like Tim Burton movies.
Why not?
I don't know. Okay, they're all right. They're just a bit ugly.
Even Charlie the Chocolate Factory?
Okay, you know what? I think Tim Burton has a very distinct visual style. And I respect it. I just don't appreciate it.
I mean, that's why he always gets Johnny Depp to like be the main cast.
Yeah.
Half the time.
I liked Big Fish though. In terms of like visuals, I thought that was really pretty. And Big Fish was also a musical on stage, like a stage musical, and then they adapted it into a film.
Okay. I see. Have you seen Big Eyes from Tim Burton?
No, I haven't. Is it good?
I think it's a true story about this girl artist that paints characters with like really big eyes, and her husband just like takes credits from it and just tells people that he painted it. It's just it's a pretty good movie. Yeah, what have you watched this week, Eliza?
Hello?
Yo, what's up?
Okay, you cut out for a minute. So what was your favorite one out of those three? Or maybe it's very weird to say favorite. It's quite, like, it's hard to choose a favorite for movies.
Maybe Brick will be my favorite. Yeah, I'll go with Brick.
What's but so special about Brick?
Brick is just good. It's like, imagine Knives Out, but set in high school scene.
Right. I mean, I'm assuming because Brick came earlier in Rian Johnson's career, it's definitely got a lot smaller of a budget. And
it's really low budget.
If you compare it to Knives Out, how does it differ in terms of storytelling, do you reckon?
Sorry?
How do you think... What from Brick has carried over to Knives Out, and what from Brick hasn't carried over to Knives Out, in your opinion?
Okay, let me think. Because I haven't gave this much thought. That's a good question. Okay, so Rian Johnson carried from Brick to Knives Out. I think it's he reveals like the murder really earlier on, like straight from the get-go, basically. But I'm not familiar with mystery films, like murder films, so I don't know if they always do this or not. But yeah, he reveals. The person that gets killed really early on. And I think another thing that he carried on to Knives Out is, like, there's always a twist behind... Okay, that sounds really basic. Like, I know, like, there's always a twist in these kind of movies, but, you know, like, we all know the twist from Knives Out, right? It's like, we think we got it, but no, you don't. Here's a twist for you.
Right, right.
They did that in Brick as well.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. And Eliza, before you ask me for my favorite movie, I asked you what you watched this week, but I think I cut out.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Let's see. It's your phone. It's my Wi-Fi.
I've watched Jackie, the one directed by Pablo Larraín, and starring Natalie Portman. That's about Jackie Kennedy after JFK was assassinated. It's a good movie. And then I watched The Commuter, and that's directed by Jaume Collet Serra. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. But it's got Liam Neeson, the guy from Taken, in the main role. And I watched that because I wanted to go through Florence Pugh's filmography. But honestly, I don't even bother with The Commuter. It's boring. It's not very good. It's below average. I would give it like a solid 4 out of 10. And then I watched A Quiet Place, the one directed by John Krasinski. And I really liked it. I really liked A Quiet Place. I think it works within... I don't know. I think what I appreciate about A Quiet Place is they take the premise of the movie and then they do everything that they can with that premise. And they don't try to introduce a whole new idea. They just work within that constraint, and they are so creative within that constraint, and that's why I really like A Quiet Place. And then I watched Life is Beautiful as well. That was for English. This is the 1997 movie. It's 1997, this movie. It's an Italian movie, by the way. This Italian movie about a Jewish Italian bookkeeper who woos this Gentile Italian woman, Nora, schoolteacher, and then they fall in love, and then they have a son. And I wouldn't say much beyond that, but it's such a good movie. And it does, like, a thing... Oh, I don't want to spoil it, and I don't want to give away too much, but it does a thing quite similar to Parasite in terms of a very smooth shift in the middle.
Does.
Yeah, and it though does. It's very different, the two halves of the movie, there's sort of like a common vibe. Maybe no, vibes are right, like common tone, and like in this case it's hopefulness within
despair. Not too jarring.
Yeah, that doesn't make it jarring. It's just like ooh. And then I watch Vi. This is a really good movie. I was recommending it to you, do you remember? Yes, it's on Māori television on the website. I watched it on demand, and it's got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 directors, all from the South Pacific. And this movie's so good. It talks about the lives of 8 indigenous women in the South Pacific Islands, and they all have the same name, Vi, or they have different names rather. Different forms of the name Vi in their different languages, and it's beautiful. It's such a beautiful movie. For example, like just the culture of the Pacific Islands is just beautiful, and it just showcases that so well. Like the scenery, and the musicality and the rhythm of their languages is just, and like the dancing and the singing and the music and the community, and these like very, very strong women characters, these wahine, they're just it's such a good movie.
Welcome back to
Oh my gosh. And then the girl who plays, I don't remember her name, but she plays Vi from the Solomon Islands. She's such a good actress. She's so, 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 so good. Yeah, I recommend that. And then I watched The 39 Steps, Alfred Hitchcock. I did a tiny little Hitchcock binge, The 39 Steps, Vertical, Rear Window. I did watch Spellbound as well last week. And then I watched Sleuth, which is this 1972 movie directed by Joseph L. Mankiewicz, and it had a huge influence on Knives Out, actually, Sleuth, in terms of, like, set design and, like, stylistic choices. There's, like, really fun stuff going on in Sleuth. And, I don't know, I kind of roll my eyes every time someone describes a location in a movie as a character. I've heard people talk about the house in Parasite as having a character of its own, and I just like roll my eyes a little bit at that, because I'm like, like, a location can have character. A location can be very distinctive. A location can provide a lot in terms of tone and like tension and all that sort of thing. But like, calling a location a character is just like, eh, a little bit to me, but maybe I just don't get it. But, I don't think this, okay, Sleuth is a movie about this hairdresser, okay? This hairdresser, played by Michael Caine, he visits this mystery novelist, who's played by Laurence Olivier, in his eccentric mansion, his eccentric estate, to ask permission to marry the novelist's wife, Marguerite, because he's having an affair with her. That's the premise of the movie. Now, isn't that interesting?
Okay.
Yeah, but, it's like a fun movie. I watched it on Amazon Prime, and my free trial on Amazon Prime is about to run out soon, and I'm trying to decide if it's worth going ahead with it. But, like, there's really fun stuff in terms of set design going on in Sleuth. Like, and I'll just give three examples from, like, the beginning of the movie, so that if anyone wants to check this out, then I haven't given too much away. There's this, like, rotating, like, hedge wall in a maze, and it's really funny because in the beginning, Michael Caine's character tries to get to the center of this maze so he can talk to Laurence Olivier's character. And he just, like, can't get to the center. He's, like, made it through most of it. He, like, can't get to the center. And then it just turns out that there's... And then Laurence Olivier just, like, pushes on the hedge and it, like, swings open. Like, there's a rotating set piece, and I think that's really fun. And then there's Jolly Jack Tar, the friendly sailor, and he's just, like, this wooden sailor with a hinge mouth that, like, laughs. And then there's this... Oh, I really like this one. There's this, like, dartboard with a hidden compartment, and the door swings out if you, like, the target in the center. So... And then Rian Johnson's talked about how Sleuth... heavily, heavily inspired Knives Out in terms of set design. And you, like, look at the house, the Thornbury estate, or rather, you look at Harlan Thornbury's estate. And it's just full of, like, bam, 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 bam. Like, Lakeith Stanfield's character says, this guy lives in a clue board. Like, the house is full of character, and I still roll my eyes at, like, the house being a character, but the house is full of character, and it's full of really fun stuff to look at. And when I was watching it with my mum, she was like, oh my gosh, this is such a cool house, and I agree. Ooh. But where was I? If I had a favourite movie from... this week, I really like Life is... I've watched good movies this week. They're all good movies except The Commuter. Commuter sucks. Or maybe it's just because I don't really like action movies. I don't know, but even the action isn't that great. I don't know, I like skip through it because I...
Is it an action movie?
It's like this... not spy, it's this, like, crime thriller action movie. Because Liam Neeson... Okay, I'll tell you the premise. Liam Neeson takes the train to work every day. And then one day, he gets fired from his job. And then his family's already struggling with finances. And then this mysterious woman comes up to him on the train. And then she gives him this challenge. And she says, well, if you give me if you do this thing, then you get, I don't know, what was it, like $10,000? Like $100,000? Like a substantial amount of money that's really going to help him survive. I don't know, I just, this movie's, it's really, it's really boring. But maybe it's just a personal preference thing. No.
Maybe it is. Mr.
Maybe.
Foster gave it like a 7 stars.
Yeah. I was just really bored. And I've, it's like very convoluted. And it like does, it's like contrived. It's contrived and convoluted. And it's just really drab. And like, it doesn't really make sense. And nah. But we're not here to complain about the commuter. Today we are here to talk about Knives Out, directed by Rian Johnson. And we've talked a little bit about that in terms of inspirations and set design. But, Brian,
Eliza.
I want to know what your initial thoughts upon completing your viewing of this movie were.
Okay, here's my initial thoughts upon completing this film. I kind of saw it coming, but in the meantime, I didn't because there's like a another twist at the end. Like if you know what I like if you know what I'm talking about.
I think it's safe for you to just say it. If you have not watched Knives Out, stop listening to this podcast.
Right now.
Yeah, like we're about to start spoiling it, so
Yeah.
just it's your fault if you stay. Like, if you have the movie spoiled for you, that's on you. We've warned you.
Okay. So you know how like at the start like it basically tells you that Marla wait was her name Marla?
Marta.
Oh, Marta, yes, Marta.
Marta Cabrera.
She's so adorable, but that's beside the point.
She
Marta,
is. Love her.
she is that I love her pants, like the really baggy and like drifty pants, but yeah, like
I like her wardrobe in this movie a lot.
her wardrobe. Oh
Yeah. Oh, sorry,
I
not like
do, I do.
physical wardrobe, but just like her outfits.
Yeah, for one second
Like
my
that purple
brain.
cardigan is super cute.
Oh, it
And I think it
is.
does a really good job at like establishing her as a character, as pretentious as that sounds. Like, you just get that sense that she's not stuck up. Like, there's that sense of softness almost. She's definitely quite a, I don't want to use the word tough, but she's very intelligent and very controlled character. She keeps her wits about her, and she's very competent, and she's very intelligent, and she's not soft, but her wardrobe, her costuming, suggests like a there's like that sense of, Brian, help me out, like not softness but like
Gentleness.
gentleness,
Now I'm making things up.
niceness. I don't know, like her wardrobe like endears you to her. Like, she seems like a very sort of comfortable person to be around. She seems like a good friend.
Yes,
She
yes.
doesn't, and you compare it to like the other like outfits in this movie, and people are in suits, people are in like fancy clothing. You have like even like Toni Collette's character, she's like in this like really flowy dress. I don't know, like I can't put this into words, but I hope you know what I mean.
I get what you're trying to say.
Yes, and I fully interrupted you. What were you going to say about Ana de Armas' character?
It basically tells us that Harlan committed suicide because he's trying to cover up for Marta, right? And it's so from then the movie's more about like, oh, How is she going to cover it up? But then at the very end, the big twist of Chris Evans actually the one that swapped it around. But so in reality, Marta didn't give Harlan the wrong mid because she actually like she because she's too big brain for that. She could just tell by lifting up the bottles which medicine is what. But at the very end, it's like, whoa, okay, that's smart. That is really smart. Yeah, that's what I thought. It's like, that's really good. And the knives, and the knife scene at the very end where Chris Evans tried to stab Marta, I got worried. I was genuinely afraid for 1 second.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, no. But then I laughed because it was actually a prop. Which Harlan, I'm pretty sure Harlan hinted at the very start that Ransom, Chris Evans' character, can't distinguish a real knife between... Ransom can't distinguish a prop knife from a real knife. That's what Harlan said at the start,
Yeah, I remember that scene. He said, you can't even tell something, until you can't even tell what's real and what's just a prop. And then he like ching takes out that little dagger out of its scaffold. What's the word? I don't even know. Yeah, but that's really interesting. I love how this movie plants little Chekhov's guns in the beginning, and then it comes back to them and it ties them up really neatly in the end. This is a movie that is really fun to rewatch.
It is.
I watched it twice in 2 days.
Yes, I saw that. I remember. You loved it so much. You watched it the other day.
My mum watched it with me as well, 2 times in 2 days. Oh, it was really fun. We watched it the first time together. And then the second night, we were like, Dad, come watch this with us. And then the three of us watched it again.
What was your initial thoughts on it?
I really liked how it was like a sandwich of genre. It was like a burger. You know, you start off with a whodunit, you know, your like classic mystery story, and then in the middle you get like a thriller and you don't really expect that, and then it finishes off being a whodunit again. So it's like a little burger of genres, you see what I mean?
Yes, it does.
And like my biggest problem with Parasite is the way it shifts genres halfway through. And I don't think this is a spoiler. I think everyone on the planet has seen Parasite by now, honestly. And if you haven't, no shame, no shade, but you should. It's a good movie, and people will be talking about it for years to come. So it's worth watching, even if you just want to be able to be included in conversations. But no, watch it the movie on its own merits. It's a really good movie. I've watched it twice as well, both of times with my mom. What was I gonna say? Yes, it's a sandwich of genres, and I like that a lot, because you think you're getting one thing and then you get something else, but you get the thing that you were expecting by the end. So you feel both surprised and satisfied. So that's what I really appreciate about it. And I thought that was good writing.
It is good writing. It's good everything in the movie.
I really like how Rian Johnson, because Rian Johnson wrote this as well. I like how he subverts expectations a lot. Because obviously at the beginning you're like, okay, this is a whodunit movie, we know what we're in for. This is like your Agatha Christie movie. Or this is like your Sherlock Holmes book. And, you know?
Yes.
It's your whodunit story. And then they solve the mystery for you. And you're like, what? And then it just turns into this movie about Marta trying to elude Daniel Craig's, you know, Benoit Blanc's character's suspicion, like, you know, she's trying to escape responsibility in a way, but like she doesn't. And then it turns into a whodunit back at the end. And then you're like, oh my gosh, who did it? What's going on? And then my favorite thing about whodunits is the way they wrap everything up really neatly at the end.
Yes.
Like whenever you read Sherlock Holmes books, and I love Sherlock Holmes, I think I've read every single short story because I have this like big book of completed stories by Arthur Conan Doyle. It's just great, and I love how at the end he just explains everything for you. So you can be very passive in consuming this sort of thing, and I think it's really fun because your brain kind of gets a workout, but it's kind of guided through that workout in a way. You can, I think, like, mystery stories can be taken or can be consumed as actively or as passively as you want.
Oh, it can.
Yeah, like, if you want to, you can really try to solve that mystery along with them. You can try to guess who the murderer was. And if you don't want to, if you just want to be there to enjoy the story, or, you know, you don't have to. It's great. I think that's so great. And I think that's really fun. But I also think that Knives Out deviates a little bit from that sort of Sherlock Holmes Watson dynamic. And I've never read an Agatha Christie novel. I was more into Sherlock Holmes, so I never read like Hercule Poirot. But you have that sort of dynamic between Sherlock Holmes and Watson, and Watson's like a stand-in for the reader, right? Where Sherlock Holmes explains everything to him, you know.
Yeah.
But with Benoit Blanc and Marta Cabrera, it's not that way at all, because he's almost incompetent as a detective or as a private investigator. A lot of things that happen aren't due to his work or his deduction. It's him getting lucky, or it's Marta being a good person and revealing something, or it's this or that, you know? So it's not even him explaining what's going on to her character. So it's not even that Sherlock Holmes-Watson dynamic. And I kind of expected that at the beginning. I was like, okay, here he is recruiting her. It's going to be a Watson thing, and he's just going to explain everything to her. But then the mystery's solved, and then it becomes her evading, not evading justice, because, you know.
She didn't do it, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was very interesting.
True. But like you say, he's very unconfident, and he looks like he's just like fooling around half the time. But in the end, like, I guess you can still tell he has the situation under control. In a way. But it is a donut hole inside the donut hole. I love that.
I love that. I love every time Daniel Craig speaks. He has this, I think it's his character's, accent? Is it from Tennessee? I think it's Tennessee, or it's like maybe Texas Louisiana. Yeah. But he has this, like, French name, and I think that's, like, a nod to, like, the Hercule Poirot sort of vibe. But I think it's so funny, and they, like, provide no explanation for it, which I think is great. He's just this guy that, like, walks around with this big roll and with, like, so much charisma. And it's just so fun to watch.
It is. Speaking of Daniel Craig's character, you know how, like, when he first came into the scene, he played the piano key, like, the really, okay, I sound stupid, but, like, yeah, like, the ding! You know why he played it?
Why?
It's like a cue for, the detective to ask a question, what time did you guys leave the party? Or something like that, I think. It's about time, I remember that. But is it, I don't know if it's what time they left or what time they saw other people leave. I don't know.
It's very interesting.
But I know it's a cue for the detective to ask a question.
Speaking of piano and music, I actually want to play you some music from Knives Out. And I want to play first this, like the Thornbury Estate cue. And I don't know if you'll hear this, but I'll send you the original clip afterwards as well, so you can chuck it straight to the podcast. But like, listen to this. It's composed by Nathan Johnson, who also worked
Okay.
with who also worked with Ryan Johnson on Brick. So listen to this. I'll just play the first 30 seconds. So what you just heard was the Thornbury Estate Cue by Nathan Johnson. Wait, Brian, can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. And what I think is really cool is he uses the Hungarian scale in this, and the reason why he does this, this is a quote, he says, "It feels jazzy, but it's leaning against notes that don't feel exactly right." And the Hungarian scale is also known as like the Hungarian gypsy scale, the Hungarian minor scale, and it's like similar to the harmonic minor scale that we know, but the fourth is raised. So instead of do re mi fa sol la di do di le sol fa mi re do, you have do re mi fi sol la di
Oh, what
do di le
the?
sol. Mi, mi, re, do. So it's like jazzy, but it doesn't sound exactly right, and it gives this like sort of air of I don't know, like eeriness. It puts you on edge a little bit, and I think that's really cool. It like provides this really cool atmosphere, and I really like the music in this movie. I think it's a really well-composed score, especially the first bit, which is called Knives Out, like the string quartet in G minor, and it has this like very sharp sound, and it just sets it up really well. It tells you exactly what tone this movie has, and you've got the strings and Nathan Johnson talked about having the musicians really dig into the strings, almost like knives.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool. This movie, the music is kind of unsettling, but it gives the movie a lot of momentum. And yeah, I really like that gypsy scale. I think it's like a really fun scale to listen to in music.
Interesting.
Did you know, speaking of the sound of music,
The sound
did
of music.
you know that Harlan Thornby is played by Christopher Plummer? Christopher Plummer, who is Captain Von Trapp from The Sound of Music.
Oh, actual.
Actuals.
Okay, I did not know that.
That's the same reaction my mother had. When the
What?
credits came up, I saw Christopher Plummer. I was like, "Oh my gosh, it's Christopher! It's the guy who sang Edelweiss, and his just, yeah, it's great."
What the? Okay.
That's your little fun fact for the day.
That is my fun fact for the day, to be honest. Did you like, I don't know about you, but when I watched it for the second time, I like picked up on a lot of like foreshadowing of the actual murderer in the whole film. Did you like pick it up?
No, what do you mean?
So like, pretty sure when Marta and Ransom went to the restaurant, Ransom asked for like an extra bowl. like when ordering food, he was like, "Oh, can I have an extra bowl?"
Because for her he knows, throwing up.
Yeah, he knows.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I did notice some things that I didn't notice on the first viewing, but I think what's really fun about this movie is if you pay attention and you notice little things, they all pay off at the end.
Yeah.
And then that's the reward you get on the first viewing, the ending, and you're like, oh my gosh, I noticed that blood splatter on her shoe. I wondered where it would come into this movie, and there it is. And then sort of the reward you get on the second viewing is you know the end, and then you notice things as they happen, and you're like, I know where that slots in.
Yeah. And also, I just done like a lot of research on Easter eggs and all like details in this film that we didn't notice. You know how there's mud stains on the window that Ransom and Marta climbed in? So the mud stain was from Ransom, because when Marta climbed in, she didn't step on the frame.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, only Ransom stepped on it.
That's very cool.
Yep. That's my fun fact for the day, even though it doesn't really match up with yours.
That's really cool. We mentioned before that I went on a little Alfred Hitchcock binge. But I didn't just do that for fun, because you see, Rian Johnson was actually very heavily influenced by Alfred Hitchcock as well. Mm-hmm. He wanted a movie. Rian Johnson wanted Knives Out to be a movie where that combined like an Alfred Hitchcock thriller and an Agatha Christie whodunit. You have the mystery and the thriller, and he did that. He did both of that, and I think he did it very successfully. But what's really interesting is Alfred Hitchcock didn't like whodunits. He thought they were a cheap form of entertainment. And Rian Johnson was like, I see your point. I respect your point. But I still really like whodunits. So he attempted to mix both. And the 39 Steps, which I know you've watched part of as well. That movie is about this everyday guy who accidentally gets stuck into this whole espionage thing. And that character influenced the character of Marta, because she's just, she gets sucked into this mystery. But also, Alfred Hitchcock didn't really like whodunits, because he felt like characters tended to lack depth. Whodunits don't have much more substance than like a murder plot and then the identity of the killer revealed. You know, like, if you think about it, like, that's it. It's very plot-driven. It doesn't have much depth to the characters. So what Rian Johnson made sure to do was to have depth in his characters. And I really like the way he introduces his characters at the beginning, and we get a very clear sense of, let's say, Jamie Lee Curtis's character, or Don Johnson's character, or Toni Collette's character, or Michael Shannon's character. And then, as the movie goes on, it expands on those characters. It shows their ugly sides. Their like eccentricity, I guess, makes them endearing in a way, even as they're behaving horribly, and selfishly, and hypocritically. And these characters all have agency and like conflicting interests, and. Yeah. I think that's really interesting. And he even put politics in there. There's
The
like,
immigrant thing.
yeah, immigrants thing, and then like there was this one little bit. It's like not super explicit, but like where one of the characters reveals that Jamie Lee Curtis's character didn't really start from scratch. She got a $1 million loan from her father, and obviously that's a reference to Donald Trump, who got a $1 million loan for his father.
Oh, wait,
So,
actual.
well, that's the way I interpreted it. I was like, that's a
Oh, okay.
reference. It's not super explicit, but it's definitely a political reference. But also, Johnson didn't set out to make this a political film. He just wanted to create this, like family gathering setting, that was realistic. And families tend to talk about politics. And then it's set in the current day. It's set in current day Massachusetts. So they're talking about issues that would concern present day Americans. So it's really realistic in that sense.
To follow up on what you said about the characters, like you said, I like how Ryan Johnson goes in depth with like the character, right? But I feel like there's some characters that's kind of neglected in a way, which is the children of, like, basically the grandchildren of Harlan Thrombey. They're
Oh,
kind of like
right.
just they're kind of just there, you know? Not much to it.
I would,
Like
yeah, I,
the Oh, yeah, you go.
like Jaden Martell's character, the one who plays Jacob, like the
The
little
one that's always
creepy
on
little
his
boy.
phone? Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
His character gets less depth. But like Catherine Langford's character, who plays Meg, she gets a little bit more depth. And you can
She does.
see her sympathetic side, but you also see like her hypocrisy.
Yeah, like the I'm a part of this family. I get what I wait. I get what I deserve.
Yeah, and also like that whole sense of them calling Marta a part of their family, but they don't even know what country she's from. They're like, my
Yeah,
gosh, that's
she's
Marta.
from
She's from
Uruguay.
Paraguay, she's from
She's
Ecuador,
from
she's from
Brazil.
Spain, Mexico. And it's like, you know, like they don't really care about her. They don't even know this basic fact about her. They don't truly care about her. They might appreciate her hard work ethic, her care, her caring nature, her like good nurse-ship, you know, her taking very good care of Harlan. But when it comes to her interests, they definitely put it beneath their own interests.
Yeah.
And Meg
And
even
now.
says, you're part of this family, but you're not really part of this family. I'm paraphrasing a
Yeah.
little bit, but like that's what she says in essence, and like, gosh.
You know how they always like tell her, "Oh, I wish you could have ca like came to the funeral. I voted you like to come, but I got outvoted." Every family member said that to her, so that means no one really wanted her to
Yeah,
go.
someone's lying there.
Yo.
You told me that you guessed it was Chris Evans right from the beginning.
Not from the beginning, but like halfway through, I was like,
Oh, what gave it away for you? Was it just
I don't
vibes?
know. It's just vibes, you know. Like it's just positive vibe. No, negative vibes. It's just bad
Right.
vibes. Yo. I just didn't vibe with how Chris Evans was vibing.
So did you guess, like, so you guessed he had something, he did something bad,
But
but did you guess exactly what he did?
No, I did not. Like I can I was a little bit suspicious about Chris Evans, like as a character, but I did not guess that he was like he did all that stuff. That's my part on it. Did you guess it?
No, I didn't, but no, I didn't. I think I just wasn't expecting it to turn back into a whodunit, so I was just like, okay, so this is now a movie about how she's trying not to get caught, and then I was watching it as that sort of movie, so I didn't even think about trying to, I didn't like think there was anything left to guess.
Ah, yeah.
In a way, like obviously there were some like things that like didn't make sense, but I was like, well, they'll explain it later. But like, yeah. If you
Yeah,
think,
like.
actually, if you think about it, you know how I described it as a burger or as a sandwich? So if we call the thriller part, like, let's say the meat patty, there's breadcrumbs in the meat patty that lead to it being a very smooth transition back to the burger. Like, they place little mysterious nuggets within the thriller, not as things to give you a thrill, but as unexplained, like, threads that need to be tied up at the end. And I think that's how it transitions so smoothly back into being a whodunit.
Yeah. I agree. I agree. He did
Yeah.
it in Brick as well, like I mentioned before. It's like, ah, it goes back to like a whodunit thingy, but in a different way.
Have you watched Looper?
Yes, I have.
What do you think of it?
Okay, wait. Wait. Okay, give me 5 seconds. Let me remind myself. Okay, Looper, it's good. It's good. It's a film that you watch for 5 minutes, for first 5 minutes, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna go down. I'm gonna go it's, okay, I'm gonna wait. I can't get my words out. Like,
It's
it's about
okay.
to be a ride. It's about to be a good it's about to be a good time. Yeah.
Right.
But Looper hurt. Like, it hurts my brain so much to watch because the time travel aspect of it's just too much. But it's good. It's really good. Only issue I had with it is Joseph Gordon-Levitt,
Levitt, yeah.
Levitt, his makeup was way too thick in Looper. That's the only issue I had.
Ah, right.
You can look at him and his face looks like a cake.
Oh.
That's how thick his makeup was. But yeah, apart from that, he's a snack.
He is. I don't know what it is about him. He's just like a good-looking man, but like you wouldn't expect him to be. He doesn't look like a typical good-looking man, but he is like a very good-looking, charming man.
Yes, he is. You know he's in every single Rian Johnson film.
Is he?
Yeah, it's like a thing that they do to have Joseph Gordon-Levitt on for every single Rian Johnson thing. J
Wait, where
Johnson
was
movie.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt dives out? I didn't see
Try guess
him.
it. Try guess it.
Try guess it. You know, I'm not.
Yeah.
What? Try guess it. Was he like a cop or something?
He was in the movie.
Or was it like a voice thing?
Yeah, he was a voice. He was a voice.
A voice thing. Was there a narrative for this movie? No, there wasn't.
Yeah. No, it's like a background. It's like a background. It's like a background
Oh.
sound.
I see, I see. Very interesting. Right. There's also another guy that's in every single one of Rian Johnson's movies, I swear. It was the guy that played the other cop. So Lakeith Stanfield played one cop. And
Yeah.
was it Oz that played the other cop? What's his name?
I'm not too sure.
But he's in every single one of Rian Johnson's movies as well.
Is he
He
actually?
is, I swear it.
Okay. Oh yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he's the voice of the show that Martha's sister was watching at the very beginning.
Right. Oh, I see. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
I like that.
Now, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt in Inception, yes.
Oh.
Have you watched 500 Days of Summer?
Nope.
It stars him, and it also stars Jo Zooey Deschanel. And she's just a delight to watch. She's very, yeah. They're
Isn't
both.
500 Days of Summer basically like internal that wait, the internal sunshine of the spotless mind?
No?
is it not? It's like in the same category.
I mean, like, they're both romances. They're both, like, failed romance movies. And that's not a spoiler. Yeah. That's, like, the premise.
They're both doom romances.
I feel like they have quite different, like, purposes and, like, tones from each other. They're both, like, quirky, though. They've both got like quirky female characters, but like I was gonna say female characters that the male characters idealize and like view wrongly, but I think I know which video essay you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like a
the maniac pixie dream girl, but then they're like because the maniac pixie dream girl, she's like this girl that exists purely to brighten up this guy's life. And then I remember them using like the example of Kristen Dunst in Elizabethtown. Elizabeth Land, I don't actually know, for Orlando Bloom's character. But no, Zooey Deschanel makes Joseph Gordon-Levitt's life sad and worse, ultimately. Oh, okay. But then, I mean, he grows after it. But like, she is not perfect. She's like definitely a flawed character. There are like mistakes she makes. And the same goes for Clementine, who's played by Kate Winslet. To Jim Carrey's character. And this has nothing to do with Knives Out. We've gone on a little tangent, but yeah. Righto.
Well, that's interesting.
We happen to
watch the same video.
We have reached the 57 minute mark. Is there anything you would like to say before we wrap up? You good?
I'm just trying to think.
That's okay. No rush.
Let's just drag it to 2 hours. what's it? I really like the ending. It's like, it's just satisfying.
Mm.
Marta gets all the gets the property and like fortune, and then just kicks them out of their house because they're all dicks.
I love the way the mug at the beginning features at the end, and it's just perfect. It's perfect because it describes Harlan as a character at the beginning, and it's perfect because it describes Martha's position like perfectly at the beginning. And it's just like a take the L, everyone, but it's just so fun.
My coffee.
They finally my house, get what my rules coming to them.
Is there anything you'd like to say?
No, I think I'm actually done.
Okay. How would you rate this movie?
Oh, we always forget to rate movies. 8. Yeah, 8 out of 10. Solid 8.
8.
9? 8?
Solid 8?
8, 9. 8, 9. I really liked it.
9. Oh.
8, 9. 8. 8, 9, somewhere eight. There. 8, 8, 8, 8, 9, 8, 9.
Okay, I would go for 7, but a 10 out of 10 for Marta.
Right.
Yo. And her, I meant her wardrobe, not that. Nah, just kidding, I like them both.
This has been 2 hours per hour, the podcast where we talk about 2 hours worth of movie and 1 hour's worth of podcast. You can find us at 2hoursperhour@gmail.com. That is the digit 2, and then hours per hour spelled out in 4. We are available on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Podtail, iHeartRadio, and basically anywhere you listen to podcasts. We also have an RSS feed. And we also can be found at patreon.com/2hoursperhour, again the digit 2 and then hours per hour spelled out in 4. That's Patreon, spelled p-a-t-r-e-o-n, and we have 3 tiers of subscription that you can pledge to.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a Patreon listener listening to this podcast right now, we love you, And if you're not a Patreon listener, we still love you.
Exactly. Next week, we will probably be talking about Little Women, the one directed by Greta Gerwig, and I'm very excited about that.
Yep, we've been waiting for this moment for...
for like, the whole of lockdown.
Yeah.
Like, we need to do this one in person. So we've been waiting for that.
Yep.
Yes.
So, this has been an hour, and we will see you guys next week.
All my assets, both liquid and otherwise, I leave in their entirety to Marta Cabrera. My entire ownership of Blood Like Wine Publishing, I leave in its entirety to Marta Cabrera. The copyright of its catalog, likewise, I leave in its entirety to Marta Cabrera.